The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Cindy Fowler from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next half hour, I shall be reading to you from the Raleigh News and Observer, the Garden Smart e-newsletter, the Triangle Gardener magazine, perhaps even the National Association Gardening e-newsletter, and maybe from Garden Smarts by Louise Goldbloom. And we will start with the Raleigh News and Observer. This article by Norman Winter. Ping Pong Gomphrena adds some bounce to your flower bed. If there was a flower that was the proverbial poster child of underutilized flowers, it would have to be the globe amaranth, or Gomphrena. 2 years ago, the Ping Pong series slipped under the radar with its debut and quietly won accolades in trials from South Texas to Pennsylvania. This summer in Columbus, Georgia, it has amazed me with its perseverance through what seems to be never-ending moisture, heat, and humidity. It's botanically Gomphrena globose and is native to Panama and Guatemala. The Ping Pong series comes in purple, lavender, white, and a mix. Reaching 20 inches in full sun, it gives a vertical dimension to the flower border. It is almost like they are floating on air. You will have a bountiful supply of cuts for the vase. They can also be hung upside down to dry and then used in a vase or potpourri dishes as an everlasting. In the garden, they are troopers, blooming all summer in intense heat and humidity. You might think anything that thrives all summer must be ugly and weed-like, but these Gomphrenas show out with vibrant colors. Few pest problems, drought tolerance, and blooms until frost make this plant a must for every gardener. To grow yours, select a site in full sun with fertile, well-drained soil. I have seen fine ones in part sun, but blooms are more prolific in full sun. The soil does not have to be luxuriant, but needs to be well drained. When working your soil, incorporate 2 pounds of fertilizer per 100 square feet of bed space. I use a 12-6-6 ratio, but a balanced one that contains a slow-release form of nitrogen will do just fine. Work the soil, the fertilizer, and 3 to 4 inches of organic matter until 6 to 8 inches. This loosening of the soil with organic matter pays dividends in rainy weather when drainage is mandatory. Once the drier season arrives, established Gomphrena plants will become drought tolerant. Space plants 18 to 24 inches apart. Plant them at the same depth if they are growing in a container. It is, however, a good idea to add a layer of mulch to conserve moisture and retard weed growth. Remove old flowers to keep the plant tidy and looking its best, as well as to keep those flowers coming. Feed plants about every 6 weeks with the same fertilizer you used in bed preparation. Try the Ping Pong Purple with yellow flowers like Profusion Yellow Zinnia, or New Gold Lantana, or Lime Green Coleus. In a cottage garden look in Columbus, the designer used Ping Pong Lavender in a border with Calliope Geranium, Cora Vinca, and Intensia Phlox. And next by Nancy Brakey. New plants will help us enjoy late summer into fall. I am thinking of cooler days ahead. Could that mean August will seem like a breath of spring after July's heat wave? I sure hope so. Despite the derision so often lobbed at August in the South, it has merits. Besides a break from the heat, usually, and less intense sunlight, it brings a few plants that provide color and interest in the landscape for late summer into autumn. While flower beds planted in spring are maturing, haven't plants such as Angelonia, Black-Eyed Susans, the Becky Shasta daisies, and the many kinds of salvias done beautifully despite the heat? They are a lesson in persistence to remember next at planting time this fall or next spring. But looking ahead, and I mean happily forward, there are some flowers that can be delightful starting in late summer. They put out fresh bloom that gives a new look to beds or containers, something different at a time when we need it. The first one I think about is a perennial called toad lily, which is a better-looking flower than the name implies. The flowers, which look different enough to be conversation starters, appear on plants growing in partial shade. The flowers typically have distinctive purple or mauve spots against white or palest lavender petals and sepals arranged in a very odd shape. These flowers do not remind me at all of toads, but they must have done so to someone, because the common name is used more often than is the genus, Tricyrtus, T-R-I-C-Y-R-T-I-S. Perhaps the most common species in the marketplace is Tricyrtus macropoda, but there are many, including named varieties. Most grow about 2 feet tall in good, moist, but well-drained soil. It is not a plant for dry shade, as I found out a few years back. The second one I'm thinking about for the coming season is another with a bad name, Joe Pye Weed. This is a beautiful perennial with clouds of dusky purple blooms in a sunny spot. The common name is applied to several tall species that can reach 5 to 7 feet or more. Shorter named varieties also exist. Pay attention to the mature height on the plant tag when you buy to get the size that suits your landscape. The taller ones may require staking. Joe Pye Weed requires moist, well-drained soil in sun or with a bit of shade. Like many perennials, it should be cut back to the base in winter once it starts to look untidy. And now, ask Nancy. Question. My flowers look ragged and heat-stressed. What should I do to freshen them up for the rest of the summer? Answer. Deadheading, which means removal of spent flowers, is an important task to keep most annuals looking fresh. This is especially true of marigolds, zinnias, and petunias. If impatiens are looking leggy, cut them back a bit as well. Doing this, plus a dose of fertilizer, should give the plants the oomph to put out some fresh growth and blooms for the warm weeks ahead. Now from the Garden Smart e-newsletter, Colorful Cutting Gardens for Fall by the Espoma Company. Seeing tiny seedlings bloom into amazing plants full of color is the best part about gardening and the reward for all the hard work. It's nice to be able to enjoy those rewards indoors too, using the flowers in arrangements. It's easy to bring the essence of the outdoors inside. All you need is a cutting garden. Choose blooms that are low maintenance, with brilliant colors and long blooming flowers. This is the place to have fun and create amazing floral bouquets to brighten your indoor spaces. top autumn plants for cutting gardens. Autumn brings a change of color. This list shows off of vibrant fall plants that will keep your bouquets fresh and on trend. All of these flowers look great together. Aster. Keep the rich colors in your garden going into fall with these stunning purple flowers. Perennial asters look like tight bunches of tiny daisies, and many well-behaved varieties have been bred from our beautiful but lanky North American native asters. Don't like purple? Asters come in pink and white as well. Summer heat is no match for these rugged plants, making them an ideal flower to have in your summer and fall garden and indoors in arrangements. Marigold. Hands down, one of the easiest flowers to grow, whether from seed or transplants. Marigolds will bring a smile to your face with rich orange, yellow, red, or cream flowers, many with streaks and stripes. They are not picky about soil, and being native to Mexico, they flourish in the summer sun and heat. They will keep blooming until frost. These annuals are long-lasting in late summer and early fall bouquets, though some people do not like their scent. Black-eyed Susan. Add some gold to your garden this summer and fall with native black-eyed Susan. They are sun lovers, but can handle some shade. Though they may flop a bit, they are tough and have a lengthy bloom time from June to October. A major perk to these cheerful flowers is that they attract pollinators. They also make wonderful cut flowers for bouquets, but leave some seed heads in your garden to feed the birds in winter. Lantana. With lantanas, you are spoiled for choice with color. These low-maintenance tropical plants come in red, yellow, orange, pink, and purple, and their flowers often change color as they mature. Once established, they are drought-tolerant, reliable bloomers. Where to start? Choose your site. Scope out an open, well-drained spot that gets 6 or more hours of sunlight per day. Check the seed packet or label to see how far apart plants should be spaced. Don't think you have room? Plant cutting flowers between your vegetable rows. They will attract pollinators, which will also improve your vegetable yields. Plan your plants. Check plant tags to see if your site meets the requirements for sun exposure and growing conditions. Be sure to keep the layout of the garden in mind. Consider giving cutting flowers their own plot, rather than planting them in your borders, where the harvested flowers can leave visual gaps. Allow spaces between the rows to make cutting and collecting easier. Keep the tallest plants toward the back of the plot so they do not shade the shorter ones. Prepare the ground. Make sure your soil is clear of any debris and weeds. You do not want your flowers competing with anything else. Work in several scoops of Espoma's Biotone Starter Plus into the soil to give your plants a good head start. Do not walk on the soil. That will compact it. And keep up with the weeding. Planting your garden. Planting with seeds or seedlings are both great options for this kind of garden. To keep flowers coming, fertilize regularly with Espoma's liquid bloom plant food. Seedlings and young plants may need daily watering. Less as plants mature and their roots grow deeper into the soil. Consider drip irrigation if lack of rain is an issue. As your plants start to bloom, keep cutting and deadheading. The more you cut, the more flowers you will get. It's as easy as that. And now from the Triangle Gardener magazine, Gazing Glow by L.A. Jackson. The origin of glazing globes can be traced back to 13th century glassblowers in Venice, Italy. Their peak of popularity is often associated with the grand English gardens of the 19th century Victorian era. But on this side of the Atlantic, gardeners continue to party with gazing globes like it's 1899. Gazing globes have been a steady ornamental staple in southern landscapes because the colorful allure of these orbs is just too great for gardeners to resist. But typically, these shiny spheres are often perched on top of concrete bases, most often the remains of a broken bird bath. Used, or perhaps more correctly, overused in this manner, has often caused gazing globes to be lumped into the less than flattering category of yard art. However, there are other ways to display gazing globes. Creative curves that can help restore the fun and charm of this old garden favorite. For starters, find a tree. Not just any tree, but an old guardian in the garden that has three or more trunks. In the cavity at the base, simply nestle a few gazing globes of different sizes and colors to pleasantly surprise passers-by. Of course, not every garden is graced with large, stately trees, but there is another trick that can provide a treat in almost any landscape. Buy a round wire tomato cage. Turn it upside down and bend the wire prongs inward so they can securely support a gazing globe from its bottom. Next, place the cage in a flowering, flowing bush such as forsythia, shrub rose, spirea, wigilla, or curia. Set the glazing globe on the prongs and position it so the sphere is slightly nuzzled into the flowers and foliage from above. This creates a floater, a magical bit of mischief that makes gardening fun. And since gazing globes come in various sizes, make use of the smaller spheres by adding them to potted plantings. Whether sitting on a short perch or resting in the container's soil, one or two of these pretty in the round will provide constant color to match the eye appeal of flowers and plants with variegated or colorful foliage. Most gazing globes are either glass or ceramic, so it is not a bad idea to bring them inside by the end of autumn. This not only prevents the fragile spheres from becoming victims of falling branches and temperatures in the winter, but it also provides the opportunity to clean them, so their captivating glow will be restored and ready for yet another growing season in the garden. And now, 7 tips for preventing garden diseases. It can be so disheartening when you spend your time and money dreaming of a beautiful garden, only to have the plants succumb prematurely to disease. Here are 7 tips to make sure your garden is filled with healthy, happy plants. 1. Plant newer varieties that have been bred for disease resistance. 2. Use good, healthy soil to put less stress on the plants, and use a smart crop rotation for edibles. 3. If you do spot disease on a plant, cut off the affected leaf or limb. 4. Properly dispose of diseased plants in the trash, not the compost. 5. Cleanliness counts. Wash your hands and clean your tools after working in one garden area so no diseases are transferred. Spread plants out so they have room for circulation, which helps prevent disease. This includes staking plants instead of letting them lie on the ground. And 7. Water early in the day so the plant's leaves have time to dry before nighttime, when diseases are more prone to spread. And now some garden events. Introduction to mushroom foraging. Learn a year's worth of wild edible mushrooms in one day. August the 11th, from 9 a.m. until 11 a.m. Learn to identify morels, black trumpets, chanterelles, and other delicious edible mushrooms with Frank Hyman, Cottage Garden Landscaping. In this class, you can learn to identify an entire year's worth, a dozen, of the best-tasting, easy-to-identify mushrooms, no poisonous look-alikes, presented in one indoor sitting. There is a fee, and you need to pre-register. This will happen at the J.C. Ralston Arboretum in Raleigh. For more information, call 919-513-7005. 919-513-7005. Houseplants walking tour and question and answers. Also on August the 11th, 10:30 a.m. Learn about popular houseplants, get helpful care tips, and ask your questions about your houseplants with our houseplants specialist, Kathy Crocus, during our informal walking tour of the greenhouse. Free guides are included, and it's free. Register at denise@homewoodnursery.com or call 919-847-0117. 919-847-0117. And this will happen at Homewood Nursery and Garden Center in Raleigh. And clever container tricks and houseplant hacks. August the 11th, 1 p.m. until 2:30 p.m. Growing in containers is easy, until you forget to water. So why not learn some houseplant hacks that make your container plants, indoors and out, easier to maintain? In this class with Frank Hyman, Cottage Garden Landscapings, you'll learn how to cut watering back from weekly to monthly using a variety of methods. You'll find out about organic, attractive container mulches like repurposed wine corks, coffee chaff, and beach pebbles. You'll also learn about a free substitute for core liners, sources for free fertilizer, how to turn a horse trough into an above-ground water garden, and how to make mobiles using high-flying air plants that only need water once a month, as well as many other innovative container ideas. There is a fee, and you need to pre-register. And this will happen at the J.C. Ralston Arboretum in Raleigh. For more information, call 919-513-7005. 919-513-7005. And through October the 27th, in Wilmington, North Carolina, the Arley Gardens Gnome Invasion in the Arley Gardens. In this sixth annual summer art event, individual artists or teams decorate the garden's 15 person-sized garden gnomes. For more information, call 910-798-7700. 910-798-7700. And now from Garden Smarts by Louise Goldbloom. And this has to do with keeping insects at bay, making your own insecticidal soap. Although commercial insecticidal soaps work well, homemade insecticidal soap is also effective. To mix your own solution, mix 4 tablespoons of liquid dishwashing soap to each gallon of water, counsels Beth Wiedner, groundskeeping supervisor at the State Gardens in Tallahassee, Florida. Does it matter whether it's soap or detergent, dishwashing liquid, laundry powder, or facial bar? No, says University of Wisconsin Extension entomologist Phil Flittery. Unlike insecticidal soaps specifically formulated for horticultural use, however, the key ingredient in household soaps may vary, not only from brand to brand, but even from one batch to another within the same brand, Phil notes. When spraying plants with any of these products, the purer they are, the better, says Phil. Avoid scented ones, as the perfumes may harm plants. A soap and water solution of 1 to 2% soap or detergent is best. Go no stronger than 2%, or it could burn plants. And a spray solution of soap and water kills soft-shelled insects, such as aphids, scales, thrips, spider mites, and mealybugs, which are the most troublesome because they're too prolific and small to pick off by hand. It kills them by softening their protective, waterproof, waxy coating. It won't kill plants, but if the solution is too strong, it may burn the leaf tips a little in the bright sun, cautions Castro Valley, California chemist Milton Palmer. We've run out of time for today's episode of Out in the Garden. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you enjoyed it. I'm Cindy Fowler, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast at our website, TriangleReadingService.org. So long until the next time. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138.